Services, so we again welcome you to be able to join with us out here in the West, where we've had some rain and the mountains have had snow, so we appreciate the weather we've been receiving, but we're going back into the 60s and 70s for our highs, which is our typical winter. We enjoy that kind of weather for California, and you can enjoy tuning in and watching us as we enjoy this beautiful weather on the Sabbath. Well, recently we looked at the Sabbath day from the perspective of proving what day the Sabbath was, seeing where things changed and what was changed and what was not changed, or even if it could be changed, and if the Sabbath still exists today. We easily proved that the Sabbath is still valid for today, and we know that it is, just as it was valid in the day of Jesus Christ and going all the way back to Adam and Eve. Today I want to look at the Sabbath from the perspective of keeping the Sabbath day. We're told, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Well, it doesn't just mean keep it holy. Okay, well, I'll look at it as being holy. It's keep it holy, and there is a way to keep it. The word keep actually means to set apart, to be observed, or to separate. So it says, remember the Sabbath day to separate it as holy. To set it apart as holy, meaning making it a different day. So what does it mean to remember the Sabbath day, and how should we keep it today? First, I want to look at how it is kept by some who even keep the Sabbath today. Those who are Sabbath keepers in the world are very minimal compared to the population of the earth. There are Sabbath keepers beyond what we consider the churches of God. There are Seventh-day Adventists, all kinds of different Seventh-day keeping groups. And then you have various sects of the Jews that keep the Sabbath day. So I want to look at how the Sabbath is kept today by some. And even today, they still keep it much as the Pharisees did in the past. I want to read from Candle Lighting Times. This is by Yeshe Ahu Helitzer, and I won't repeat that, but that is the author of this article, Candle Lighting Times, and this is by a Sabbath keeping group. It is a major responsibility for all Jews to honor the Sabbath or festival by lighting candles 18 minutes before sunset. The unique commandment entrusted to the Jewish women is rich in meaning and purpose. So how many of you last night, 18 minutes before sundown, lit your candles? We realize we keep the Sabbath different, and we realize that it is it's going to be different. Now, I lit my barbecue, but it was after sundown, lit my barbecue last night, which some, as we will look at, would think is wrong. But it wasn't God's commandment that we 18 minutes before sundown. You're not going to find that in Scripture, that 18 minutes before sundown, only the women would light these candles. It wasn't a commandment, but it was a form of worship, and it has continued today with many as a form of worship. Not only has it continued today in other groups as a form of worship, it is sometimes picked up by individuals, even within the Church of God, who look at it and say, well, this is the way they keep the Sabbath, and that's the way it was kept in the Old Testament or in the New Testament. We need to keep it that way. And yet we'll see why and how the Sabbath is kept and how it should have been kept even then. We know in Matthew 15:9 it says, in vain do they worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. And that's why I say here it says this unique commandment about 18 minutes before sundown, you light a candle, is a commandment. But it's not God's commandment. It is the commandments of men. This particular article, Candle Lighting Times, goes on. It says, in a world so full of darkness, the candles lit by the Jewish women and girls bring light, joy, and holiness. A little light, our sages say, and this is where it all comes from, dispels much darkness. It is important to know the exact candle lighting time. You got to know that exact candle lighting time. Because we are not allowed under any circumstances to kindle these or any other lights after sunset. Married women should light at least two candles corresponding to the two commandments. Remember the Sabbath day and observe the Sabbath day. But single women, even younger girls, light only one in deference to their mothers. It goes on, preparations and cooking of food is prohibited. These are prime examples of work which is generative. Now, they say generative work is not allowed. Generative meaning changing something's character. Now, you think on the Sabbath or you think anytime with a Christian, changing character would be good. No, this is changing the character of something. So it says boiling, not including only bringing liquid to a boil with food in it, but changing food by pouring boiling water over it. It is also considered cooking to boil the water itself. Baking means not just warming something to make it better, but includes bringing something to a high temperature, high enough to change it. This includes toasting bread, even in an already heated oven or surface. So let's say you have your stove going before Sabbath starts. You turn it off, and 5 minutes after Sabbath, you go in and put a piece of bread on there and make it toast. They say, nope, you changed the properties of the bread. You're now cooking. You're working on the Sabbath. You're changing the bread's character. So they find ways, it's interesting, when you have these commandments of men, you have loopholes by those who make these commandments. And here they find a way around their self-established law. This one is carrying anything out of a domain is prohibited. Now, this goes back to the Pharisaical rules of carrying a cloak. Now, if you can't carry anything out of your domain. But they made a loophole that if you drop your cloak, you can pick it up. So you walk and you drop your cloak. Oh, step forward, pick it up. Oh, drop your cloak again. And just keep moving your cloak around where you need to go. So that was legal in their own commandments. So here it says you cannot carry anything out of a domain because it's prohibited. Domain means your property, your home, buildings, campus. A walled city is considered a single domain. So domain began to expand. It should be noted that in many Jewish communities, they have established an eruv, which is a fence which legally establishes the entire community as a single domain. You just increase the size of your domain and say, well, I'm not breaking my own command because now my domain has increased. Lighting a fire on the Sabbath is not permitted. This is understood to mean doing anything on the Sabbath which directly or indirectly lights a fire, such as striking a match, lighting a gas stove, adding wood to a fire, changing a thermostat so as to start the gas or oil furnace, or using, turning on and off, electricity or anything electronic is included in this rule. So this lighting a fire on the Sabbath is not prohibited. So I want to ask the simple question, do these commandments and requirements help the Sabbath to be a delight? You look at them and go, wow, there's so much I got to learn to know how to do it right, instead of, is it even making the Sabbath a delight? Is it making it enjoyable? I want to look at how Christ kept the Sabbath, and we'll get a better idea of how we should be keeping the Sabbath today. Let's go to Matthew chapter 12. And verse 1, we're going to turn to Matthew chapter 12 and look at how Christ kept it. 12 and verse 1. At that time, Jesus went on the Sabbath day through the corn, and his disciples were hungry and began to pluck the ears of corn or the ears of grain to eat. Now, first, we look at what is happening here. We see that they're walking. It wasn't walking in their domain. It wasn't even walking inside the city. It was walking out in a field of corn. It was outdoors. We also see that it was okay for them to stop and get something to eat, to pluck those ears of corn or to pick it from a tree or plant. It said, but when the Pharisees saw it, they said to him, behold, your disciples do what is not lawful to do upon the Sabbath day. One thing you don't want to do is question the lawmaker about the law being wrong, or somebody breaking it in a wrong way. I want to stop here and ask a quick question. Who said it was unlawful? Did Christ say it's unlawful and then he came and changed it? Or was it, as we know, the Pharisees who made that law, and it was the Pharisees saying they are doing what is unlawful? In Deuteronomy 23, I'm going to refer to this as Deuteronomy 23, verse 24 and 25. It says, "When you come into your neighbor's vineyard, then you may eat grapes to your fill at your own pleasure." So it says you're walking by a vineyard and you see grapes hanging there. Just reach over and have some grapes. "But you shall not put any into your vessel," saying, don't go, "Oh, every time I walk by, I'm going to take me a 5-gallon bucket and I'm going to load it full of grapes. And so I'm just going to take advantage of the grapes that are there. "When you come into a standing grain of your neighbor, you shall pluck the heads of grain with your hand, but you shall not move a sickle against your neighbor's standing grain." It was designed when they put fields together that the corners were going to be left for those who were in need. So when they passed by, they could pick what they needed. But it didn't say, when you pass by, bring a sickle and start harvesting the corners, because the corners would get smaller and smaller. And as you know, eventually the field's gone. So it's not saying you can just take what you want, but it is saying that's legal. So when they said your disciples are doing what's not legal or right on the Sabbath, what is it that they were not doing lawful? It was lawful to pluck that, and it was lawful to be walking out on the Sabbath. So the Pharisees were saying, your disciples are doing something that you can't do on the Sabbath. So in verse 3, he says, "He said to them, 'Have you not read what David did when he was hungry and those who were with him? How he entered into the house of God and did eat the showbread, which was not lawful for him to eat, neither for them that were with him, but for only the priest. Or have you not read in the law how the Sabbath day the priest in the temple profane the Sabbath and are blameless? But I say to you that in this place there's one greater than the temple.'" He said, you don't realize there's one that's greater than even the temple itself standing before you. And you're questioning now what's right on the Sabbath. "If you had known what this means, 'I will have mercy and not sacrifice,' you would not have condemned the guiltless." He said, the disciples are guiltless. They haven't broken the law. "For the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath day." He said, you're questioning the one who made the law and saying, no, we're going to argue with you that you're breaking it. Jesus Christ is the one who decides what is right and wrong. And even from looking at this example, we see that he was walking on the Sabbath. And they stopped and plucked the ears of grain or ears of corn and began to eat. He was basically saying, why are you telling me what I can't do on the Sabbath when I'm Lord of the Sabbath? He said, I'm standing before you. Verse 9, he says, "When he departed from there, he went into their synagogue, and behold, there was a man which had his hand withered. And they asked him, saying, 'Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath days?' That they might accuse him." They said, okay, we're going to catch him here. If he may have gotten out of the field and with the disciples, but is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath day? So once again, they're trying to catch him in breaking what they considered a commandment, what they considered a law. And in verse 11, he said to them, "What man shall there be among you that if he has one sheep and it falls into a pit on the Sabbath day, he'll not lay hold on it and lift it out?" I mentioned this in Bakersfield when I was up there last week. There's a video on, I think it's on Facebook, but you see this sheep that is stuck in this little ravine. It's about a foot and a half wide and probably 3 feet deep. And this guy comes by and he's helping the sheep, and he gets the sheep out, and the sheep runs as fast as it can and leaps and lands right back in the ravine about 30 feet down the row. And when you think of dumb sheep or dumb animals, that's why they're called that. They just ran and jumped right back into it. But he's saying, if you see a sheep like that, if you see a single sheep, he said, is it wrong? Who's not going to lay hold on it and lift it out? So we see here by default, he's saying, it's not wrong to help an animal that's endangered or a trapped animal to relieve their suffering. And yet some have taken that to mean, well, then I can tend animals. I'll shear my sheep because, you know, it's really hot today and the sheep need that wool taken off of them. No, that goes to the opposite extremes. It's not an animal that's in danger. So verse 12, it says, "How much then is a man better than a sheep?" He said, if you're going to help a sheep and you're going to pick the sheep up out of the ditch, how much better is a man? "Wherefore it is lawful to do well on the Sabbath days. Now, you have other Sabbath keepers. I've talked about the Pharisees, talked about those today who say it is so strict, you have to follow these guidelines, and there's all of these new commandments. To the opposite extreme, well, if it's lawful to do well, I've got all these things I'm going to fit into doing well on the Sabbath. Here's all the things I like to do well or to feel like I'm doing well for others. And so they take it to the opposite extreme. Albert Barnes states, it is lawful to do well on the Sabbath days. This was universally allowed by Jesus or by the Jews in the abstract. And Jesus only showed them that the principle on which they acted in other things applied with more force in this case before them, and that the act which he was about to perform was by their own confession lawful. So it says they allowed certain things in the abstract, but he says he showed them a principle. And again, that is one of the key things to understanding the Sabbath day and how the Sabbath is to be kept, is in principle and based on the things that are given to us, what is right and what is wrong. So he said, by their own law, they would have to confess, if you can help an animal, then why is it wrong for me to heal this individual on the Sabbath? Henry commentary states, the Jewish teachers had corrupted many of the commandments by interpreting them more loosely than they were intended. And you say, well, wait a minute. We're looking at how they interpreted them harshly. Nine of the commandments they interpreted loosely. It says a mistake which Christ discovered and rectified in chapter 5 in his Sermon on the Mount. But concerning the fourth commandment, they had erred in the opposite extreme and interpreted it too strictly. So the Sabbath commandment, they're like, we're going to take this one, we're going to run with it. We can come up with so many things of what's right and what's wrong on the Sabbath day, and yet on the others, they corrupted them and were very loose on, oh, well, you know whether God's before me. Oh, but I've got this mammon. I've got this money. I'm not going to give this up. This is my thing. So, but I still consider that putting God first above everything. So it says they interpreted the Sabbath too strictly. Note, it is common for men of corrupt minds by their zeal in rituals and the external services of religion to think that they can atone for the looseness of their morals. Okay, we lowered the other nine, so we've got to have something that kind of earns our righteousness back. And so we're going to keep the Sabbath better than it's ever been kept. But he said, they are cursed who add to it and those who take away from the words of this book. So we see that it is lawful to do something that is good. It is lawful to help a human being on the Sabbath day. Visiting someone in a hospital or a nursing home. Dropping by on someone who can't come to services, not if they have COVID. You don't want to go, okay, sorry you have COVID. I'm going to come by and visit with you for a while. Not a good thing, then you wouldn't be able to come to services. But dropping in on someone who can't come to services and taking someone a meal. If they're ill or they're not able to come to services or for whatever reason there's an affliction that they have that they can't come to services, drop by and drop them off a meal. Something that is doing good on the Sabbath. Now, what is taking it to extremes is when people who are in that profession, they say, well, if doing good on the Sabbath, if Christ healed a man and he says doing good on the Sabbath is good, if I'm in the medical profession, if I'm in the service profession, then I can just keep doing that on the Sabbath day because that's doing good. So it's taking it to extreme when every Sabbath they're working or continuing to do something and doing it under the name of helping someone. We don't wear hospital scrubs to services because we might be called in for an emergency. Well, I only go in on emergencies, so I'm going to wear my scrubs to services because every Sabbath now I get called in for an emergency. I said, of course you do, because I know if you're going to come one time, you'll come every week if they call it an emergency. It has been done. It's been tried. The question comes up from time to time, what about volunteer work? If you're volunteering to do service for a community, for a group of people, can you volunteer and commit to volunteering and helping on the Sabbath? Well, again, you're not finding someone in need. You're volunteering or planning a day of service. You're planning a day of work. It's not as if you came upon somebody in need and said, oh, you know, let me help you, or can I help you today? You're planning on the Sabbath day, and you're planning on a particular day. And I want to note the church doesn't monitor your Sabbath behavior and, okay, what did you do last Sabbath? Okay, they're keeping the Sabbath well. How are they keeping the Sabbath? And we don't give a list of rules and guidelines. And that's why I go back to the fact that there are principles that are given to us that we should all understand. There are things that are very clear, cut and dry. But there's things that Christ expanded and explained to us that we go, okay, by principle, this is the way it should be done, but not to the extremes. So the same principles apply. If you're doing something on the Sabbath that helps or to do good to another person, that's one thing. But to volunteer for service or service projects is another, because you're no longer under your control. When you volunteer and they say, okay, you're going to go do this, you're going to clean these, I need you to go over here. It's no different than having a boss telling you, this is where you're going to work today. This is what I want you to do today. You're not making the choice. And when it goes back to the Sabbath keeping, it's just like the other things that God commands us. He said, I've set this before you. You have to choose, but it is your choice. And so on the Sabbath day, you and anybody within your realm, and we can't say, well, I'm going to put gates around the city so the entire city is in my realm. No, anybody within your control. And when we sign up for those things and we volunteer for particular things and we commit to being somewhere every Sabbath, then we're also giving up control to that. Verse 13, he says, said to the man, stretch forth your hand. And he stretched it forth, and it was restored like the other. So Christ said, he healed it. He did good. Now, it doesn't say that Christ went through the city looking for those who were crippled. It just said he came upon an individual, just as if you would come upon a sheep that was stuck in a ditch. He wasn't looking for individuals to heal. He came upon this individual, and he healed him. So from these examples, we see a pretty good indication of how the Lord of the Sabbath feels about the Sabbath and how things are to be kept. We look at some of the common ways of keeping the modern Sabbath today, as well as questions that people have. And I want to look at some of the questions that have come into headquarters over the years. Let me ask the first question. Do we keep the Sabbath differently than the New Testament church kept it? Now, some may say, no, we shouldn't keep it any different. But we do, absolutely. We drive cars. I can tell you, as a matter of fact, that the New Testament church didn't drive to church. We have to, and we have to put up with the traffic and all those things to get here. We drive cars. We have electricity. We have lights on in the building here. We're webcasting for those who can't be at services. We have internet. Life is different now, and the way that Sabbath is kept is different. But what is the same are the principles in how the Sabbath is kept, and that is the bottom line. The principles are the same. Let's look at Friday evening. One thing that we can do on Friday is prepare for the Sabbath day so that we don't have a lot of extra things to do on the Sabbath. Here are some suggestions. Fill up the car with gas. I was actually running the store yesterday and just grabbing a couple of things, and I looked down and was like, oh, we've got an eighth of a tank of gas. We got to go get gas. I didn't want to do that this morning. Fill up the car with gas, and especially if you're traveling a large distance. We have members in the United States who travel 2.5 to 3 hours or 3.5 hours to get to services, and so filling up the car is something that's important. Is it wrong to fill up the car on the Sabbath? Well, not according to the way Christ kept the Sabbath day. Some say it's wrong to fill up. It's wrong to buy gas on the Sabbath because now you're making somebody work. You're making the gas station attendant work. They're ringing you up your gas bill. Well, we have no control over who's running the gas stations and who's doing those things. We have mail delivery. If you're going to say, well, you're making the gas man work, do you allow your mail to be delivered on the Sabbath? Because you have a mailman who's driving around and he's putting your mail in the box. You could say, okay, I need to cancel my mail service every Saturday. No, most of us want to go home. We check the mail on the way back home. Again, we don't want to stop all the things that are happening on the Sabbath. And we have article after article about keeping the Sabbath and how the Sabbath is kept. how it is even kept today. And in those things that we don't have control over, and what the article brings out is that God called us to understand the Sabbath, and he called us to the knowledge of the Sabbath and to keep the Sabbath. He has not called them to the Sabbath yet, and then we can't control what they do on the Sabbath. What God does expect us to do is to make decisions and follow the principles of those things that we do have control over. But he expects us to keep the Sabbath. Now, about getting gas, some have said, well, it's wrong to buy gas on the Sabbath. And I brought this point out when I was actually, when I had the circuit of Stockton, Bakersfield, and Los Angeles. Now, of course, you can't do those in one day. I don't think you can do them in one day. It's quite the drive. Now, there were days that I would fill up on Friday, filled up my car, but because I was going to Bakersfield and Los Angeles, and then all the way, I lived in Visalia, going all the way back up to Visalia, or days that I had Bakersfield and Stockton, and I was driving up to Stockton, my vehicle would run out of gas before the end of the Sabbath. And somebody said, when it got low, you need to pull over and just wait for the Sabbath to end and then fill up with gas and come home. Another one said, no, it's different for pastors. It's okay for pastors to stop and get gas. And I said, wait a minute. Does God give us a different law or a different scale for members and pastors? You know, when God said, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, I can keep it holy, and by gas, you buy gas, you're breaking it. And I said, there's not a different standard for pastors and for members. There's not a grading scale. It's the same law. But there are certain things that we can do in advance, and there are certain things that we can prepare for. We can do the dishes ahead of time, have the house clean, pick up groceries that we're going to need for the Sabbath. If you need to, iron the clothes that you're going to wear on the Sabbath. Being in the church over 50 years, I've had people say, if you iron something on the Sabbath day, you're breaking the Sabbath. Others said, well, no, I always iron my shirt. I want to look really nice on the Sabbath day. And they say, well, you have to do it beforehand. And again, begin to develop this time schedule or how much can be done. But it's nice to have our clothes ironed and ready for the Sabbath day so we don't have to do that. Prepare larger meals in advance or prepare in advance for a Friday night meal. So we're not working and preparing diligently for a large meal on the Sabbath day. I want to look at what has typically been called Preparation Day. If I was to say to you, well, what do you do on the Preparation Day? Most people think, oh, that's Friday. Friday is the Preparation Day. The fact is the term is only used before a high Sabbath, and it was generally used before preparing the sacrifices and preparing what was going to be done for the Paschal week of Passover. We don't see that term used until Matthew's account. And in Matthew 27:62, he says, on the next day which followed, which was the day of preparation, the chief priests and Pharisees gathered together to Pilate and began to prepare for the holy day. Barnes' note states, the first day of the feast of Passover was called the day of preparation because of all the things that had been in getting ready for the observance of the Paschal week. Yet people have taken that and they go, God designed a preparation day so you can't do anything on the Sabbath. Well, that's not what this is talking about. Yeah, people say, well, the preparation day goes all the way back to the Exodus. That God designed a preparation day before the Sabbath in telling them that they had to collect manna on the sixth day. They collected all the manna, they prepared it, so they wouldn't be doing anything on the Sabbath. Let's take a look at that. Why did God have them do extra on the day before the Sabbath, and was it called a preparation day? Some have actually taken this and made Friday, designed it or set it as a day. We're commanded to do this as a day of preparation, where that we see preparation day, that actual term, was used before the holy day, spring holy days. But here, there is a reason why we do certain things on Friday. But Friday itself, for some, has become, that becomes the Pharisaical day of this is when you can do this, do this, do this, and this is what you have to do. And the reason is because of the Sabbath. So let's look at Exodus chapter 16. Exodus chapter 16, Verse 4 and 5 says, "The Lord said to Moses, 'Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain quota every day, that I may test them.'" He says that. The reason I'm having them go out and get a certain quota every day is that I'm going to test them. Can they follow my directions? Whether they will walk in my law or not. He said, I'm going to test them. I want to know if they're going to follow my command. He says, on the sixth day, that they shall prepare what they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather daily. So on the sixth day, Moses was to give this commandment to the people. You go out and you gather manna, but today is a different day. We're preparing for something. And so he told them to prepare twice as much, or gather twice as much. Exodus 16, verse 22. "And it came to pass on that sixth day that they gathered twice as much bread, two omers for one man. And all the rulers of the congregation came and told Moses. And he said to them, 'This is that which the Lord has said, tomorrow is the rest of the holy Sabbath unto the Lord.'" He said, there's a reason why I'm telling you to collect twice as much, because I'm setting a day apart, and I want you to understand that this day is holy. Not the preparation day, but the Sabbath itself. He said, "Bake what you must bake, bake that which you will take and bake by day, and seethe what you might seethe, and what remains over lay up for yourselves to be kept until the morning." Now, if they kept it during the week, if they tried to store up and say, "Well, I'm gonna get three times the amount on a Tuesday," it turned sour and went bad, and they wouldn't last. But God gave the command and performed a miracle that they would collect twice as much on Friday, and it lasted throughout the Sabbath. There's a couple of things I want us to notice here, and God gave them a command to gather twice as much for a couple of reasons. There's at least two besides the fact that he said, this is to test them whether they're going to obey my laws and commands. So there's two reasons I want to focus on and look at of why they were commanded to gather twice as much. One, and the main reason, is to show them what day was the Sabbath day. If they collected twice as much and it didn't spoil, and then they were told the next day is the Sabbath day, it is holy, then every week was a reminder. Today is the day you gather twice as much, because tomorrow is the Sabbath. The focus was on the Sabbath. And they had been in captivity and had probably lost sight of when the Sabbath was. That's why God gave the command, remember the Sabbath day. Go back to keeping it. Secondly, they were learning to be ready for the Sabbath day and be prepared for that day of rest. He was testing them. Are you going to set that day aside, or are you going to go, I'm just going to gather the same amount because I'm going to gather tomorrow? Well, if they did, there was nothing to gather on the Sabbath. But he was testing them in gathering and baking, and not to go out and hoard as they did. So we should plan to enter the Sabbath and be prepared to rest. But is the day itself set aside as a commanded? This is the day of preparation. It is a commanded day to do all of these certain things, and everybody would have their own list of what is different. Hebrews 4:9 says there remains a rest, or a sabbatismos, for the people of God. And there does remain a Sabbath rest. And it is more enjoyable when those things are taken care of in advance. How many times do we watch the sun going down as we rush around, and then when the Sabbath comes, we hit the Sabbath, we got 2 minutes left, 1 minute left, and we hit the Sabbath at a screeching halt. In the wintertime, for those of us in California, that's pretty typical, because as the sun goes down, usually as everybody's getting off of work, or they get off of work 15, 20 minutes or half hour early because of when the sun sets, and they say, I have to leave. And you have to work up until the time the sun goes down, and then you go, okay, I just wasted my preparation day. Well, if that's what you have, that's what you have. So the next day you go, I don't have a clothes ironed, but if I iron my shirt, I'm sinning. No, you have a preparation day, and you're making a point not to work on the Sabbath, going into the Sabbath. Unfortunately, that's the world we live in, that sometimes it is that way. We come to a screeching halt. I want to look at Friday evening. We'll start with Friday and look at ideas of how to make the Sabbath a delight. Some like to plan a special dinner on Friday night. It makes it more memorable for the family. It sets the day apart from others, and it makes some like to set up the table, make the table setting different on that particular day. When my kids were little, they would ask when they see the table being set or they see a special meal being prepared, they're like, "Oh, is it the Sabbath tonight?" Because they knew Friday nights were going to be a special meal. Even my dogs know when we're going to have a Friday night meal. Most of the time we eat in the dining room or the family room, but on the Sabbath we eat in the formal dining room. And if we're in there, the dogs get excited. They're like, there is going to be something good for us at the end of the Sabbath meal. And so they will get excited even when we're getting ready and we're starting to put some plates on the table in that room. They're like, there's something good coming. So even they know that this is different. They know they're going to get bones. They know they're going to get steak trimming, something that's different. But my kids would know something is different. Now, even during the week, if for some reason we made a special meal, when my kids were little, 4, 5, 6 years old, they're like, is it the Sabbath already? Because we're having a special meal. So you can do something to make the Sabbath special. We're your kids, just as the children of Israel. By habit, oh, this day is different. We're preparing to keep the Sabbath day. You can do that on Friday evening meals. We can sit and do something different together as a family. Change the routine. Watch In Accord, Friday Night Live, Bible studies, FOI classes, or something similar. Just sitting and talking as a family. Sometimes it's not always possible, especially the kids at various ages. Some go to bed early. Others are doing schoolwork during the week. Friday night's a good time to change that habit. Change the way things are done. Discuss the feast. Discuss summer camps. Discuss what they're learning in school. But sit down and just change the discussion that we typically aren't able to have during the week. Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 10. Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 10. He says, "For he who has entered into his rest, he has also ceased from his own works as God did from his." Now, we know that we have to cease from our work. And again, by principle, we understand what that means. "Therefore, let us labor to enter into that rest." Now, we're talking about those two different rests that are given to us in Hebrews, but we labor to enter into the rest. We also do on Friday. We labor as we get ready to get ready for the Sabbath and get ready for activities or get ready for the weekend. We labor to enter that rest, lest anyone fall under the same example of unbelief. As we saw in Strong's Concordance, the word rest here comes from a different word than sabbatismos. This word is kataposis, or reposing, or taking an abode, or a rest. So you have the rest, which is talking about the thousand-year millennial period, and you're talking about the Sabbath rest, which is a weekly reposing, taking time to slow things down. God's weekly Sabbath and annual Sabbath point towards a rest in the future. That's something you can talk about, discuss as a family, discuss with your children, and that abode that we're going to enter. That thousand-year millennial period that we picture by the Feast of Tabernacles, how that's kept. And we should talk about it. We could talk about the return of Christ and what might happen first. Mr. Franks talked about 2021 and how the year was challenging and so difficult for much of the world. Looking at that, what do you think Christ is going to change first when he returns? Boy, there's a big discussion. Is he going to change pollution, crime, violence, the economy? Is he going to change the land first? What is it that's going to change first? There's a major discussion that you could have every week and talk about some of those changes and what might come first. Focus on why we have a weekly Sabbath, why it's different. Realize and type the fulfillment of the rest that's in the future. Talk about how the Sabbath is a different day. It pictures something different. How is this like what's going to happen in the future? And describing to your children the rest and what it means to rest physically, but also the rest and what it means spiritually to those who were coming into that focused rest. Isaiah chapter 58. Isaiah 58 is a passage that describes the Sabbath, and that many have pharisaically devised their own rules or guidelines on what is meant by this. Isaiah 58 and verse 13 describes how the Sabbath is to be kept. If you turn your foot away from the Sabbath, from doing your own pleasure on my holy day, and you call the Sabbath a delight, the holy of the Lord, honorable, and shall honor him, not doing your own ways, nor finding your own pleasures, nor speaking your own words, then you shall delight yourself in the Lord, and I will cause you to ride high upon the places of the earth, and feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken it. Now, some have looked at that and said, not doing your own ways, finding your own pleasure, not using your own words. This is what it means to me, and these are the new guidelines, and this is how the Sabbath is going to be kept, and I'm going to tell everybody else they need to keep the Sabbath that way as well. We see several things here, and there are many misinterpretations of what is stated. It says, we turn away from doing our own pleasure. I have been told, if you find it pleasurable and desirable, you can't do it on the Sabbath. You're sinning if you do it. Well, fishing, hunting, golfing, yard work, baseball, movies, those things, if that's what your pleasure is, those are your hobbies, that's doing something of your own pleasure. But it doesn't mean we avoid things that are pleasurable. God says the Sabbath is to be a delight. He says you call the Sabbath a delight. He doesn't say, call the Sabbath a delight, but don't do anything pleasurable. That's not what God is stating. There are a lot of things that are edifying to God and are pleasurable to us. There's a lot of things that we enjoy doing on the Sabbath day, and we should enjoy doing on the Sabbath. But it doesn't mean we're doing our own pleasure because we're doing something enjoyable. The command is not to avoid pleasure, but it is to stop doing our own thing. Stop doing things that are going to take your focus and put it on something different than God or different than the Sabbath day. We want to do things that make the day different. We also learn, he says, call the Sabbath a delight. There was a time in our modern church era that when people made the Sabbath as much of a burden to their families as the Pharisees did. No music unless it's classical music or hymns. Now, for those of you who were in the church in the 80s, there was a, I don't know if it was a one song or if it was a group of songs, but it was called Hooked on Classics. And they took all the classics and they put a beat to it, and you listen to this classical music, but it just went from one song to another, one artist to another of classical music. And there were parents who said, no, you can't listen to that. That's not classical music. They changed it. You have to listen to the original classical music on the Sabbath, or no music at all. So you couldn't even have listened to Hooked on Classics. No going out on walks. You can't walk on the Sabbath. If you normally go for a walk, or if you just want to go for a walk on the Sabbath, that's exercising, and you can't walk on the Sabbath. Well, we already saw, it says Christ was walking with his disciples in a field, which the fields were outside of town. You don't go into the middle of Jerusalem, and there's a giant cornfield. They were outside of town. But they say, if you go on walks, that's exercising. If you talk, you have to talk only about the Bible. If you talk about news, what's happening in the week, if you're asking people how they're doing, you're sinning because that's doing your own words. You don't talk your own words. Well, then you'd have to learn how to talk to people in in biblical terms without using words to try to describe that, because that would be your own words. And again, we can see how easy it is to get into that. But they use that passage, not using your own words. You can't talk about your own personal things. You can't talk about things that are going on. You can only talk about the Bible. Clark commentary says, not speaking your own words. Some translations say from speaking vain words. Sometimes we do things and we talk about things during the week that really don't mean a whole lot, but we just talk. Some people like to talk and talk a lot, and you go, okay, about a fourth of what they say is useful, and I can enjoy that. But here it says, don't use vain words. It's necessary to add some epithet to make out the sense of it. The Septuagint says, don't use angry words. The Chaldees say, don't use words of violence. It says it's not a day to argue and debate and to force your opinions on others. Don't use your own words. Now, can we discuss God's word and say, this is what God's word says and this is what I've always understood? That's not using your own words. You're talking about God's word. But if you say, this is what I believe and this is what you need to understand and what you need to learn, that's going to be words of angry or violence, or could come to that. But we're not to argue. We're not to be fighting or arguing about things on the Sabbath day. And don't be useless in your talking. But it doesn't tell us we can't talk or that we can only say things that are in the Bible. These are man's ideas, and these have become commandments of men, even within the church of God. Now, here's what it means to me. You can't use your own words, instead of looking at it and saying, okay, what was intended by that? We also learn, he says, we should honor him on the Sabbath day. Our dress at services, where we always say we should wear our best or wear what's appropriate. Appropriate for where you are. And I say that because sometimes in traveling for the Feast of Tabernacles, people go to different parts of the world. And in Hawaii, they have Hawaiian shirts. In parts of the Caribbean, they have short sleeve shirts that are dress shirts that are worn for services. Wearing what is your best or what's appropriate. We went to St. Lucia for the feast one year. And in St. Lucia, they said, it is humid. I think it was 150% humidity. It just was so humid. They were trying something the year we went, and they had outdoor services. And part of it was under canopies, and part of it was just open seating in the sun. Either way, you held your songbook out like this because you're dripping between you and the songbook. But it was so hot, so humid. That was the, I mentioned they tried something that year. That was the only year they tried it because it didn't work. It's much like Hawaii. Rains would come over, it'd rain for 15 minutes and then move on. So when it rained, everybody in the seats gathered under the canopies. When it stopped raining, they went out, wiped their seats off, got the water off the chairs, and the humidity rose again. So they figured out that's not a good thing to do. But to dress appropriately, they said the islanders will wear three-piece suits for the feast. Please don't think that you have to wear a three-piece suit. So it was like Hawaii. You could wear nice pants and a short sleeve shirt. And the islanders, they're wearing three-piece suits, and you didn't see any sweat whatsoever. They're used to the humidity. Those of us from the United States are wearing short sleeve shirts, and they're wet, and everything just keeps draining as we perspire in that humidity. So we wear what we can, and we wear what we can afford. Now, in the past, there's been some cases where people came to the church, they're coming to a knowledge of the Sabbath and the truth, and they came in and they go, you can't be in here. You're not wearing a suit. I don't have a suit. Well, don't come back until you have a suit. They may have been wearing their best, but they said, no, you have to have a suit. We wear our best, and over time, we learn what is best for us. Now, our best, over time, we should be able to build up and go, I do want to wear a suit. I want to wear something that's appropriate. Now, we wouldn't wear a tuxedo. That may be your best. You go, well, my best is a tuxedo. I'm going to wear a tuxedo, bow tie, cummerbund, put the whole thing on. And in the past, there have been individuals who did that. They traveled around in areas to perform and do special music, and they always wore a tuxedo. But it wasn't, I'm going to wear my best to honor God. It was, look how good I look. Am I not looking good on the Sabbath day? Again, we want to make sure that we're not focusing on ourselves and focusing on I'm looking good in front of everybody else. It's no, I'm coming to services. I'm coming to honor God. I'm assembling before Him with God's people. I want to dress and look good. I want to look right. And we also honor God by prayer, fasting, study, and meditation. Those are things that we have the time to do on the Sabbath. You may say, well, I have to leave early in the morning. I get home late at night because of traffic. But on the Sabbath day, you have a time to rest. I mentioned watching something on Friday evening with the various programs that we have available. But prayer, fasting, study, and meditation. What it doesn't say is that there's a certain amount of time that you have to do this or a certain amount of time that you have to spend. The minimum, you have to pray a minimum of 30 minutes a day, but it should be an hour a day. That was part of the teaching by some in the past. Doesn't tell us that. Doesn't tell us you should use this day and you have to do all four. Doesn't say you have to fast on the Sabbath. These are things that you can do and things that you can use to honor God. Doesn't tell us that this is a complete list of things. Doesn't tell us these are the only things to do. Nor does it tell us that everyone has their own interpretation of how do I honor God on the Sabbath? Well, this is how I honor God, and this is how everybody should honor God on the Sabbath. We see certain things will get us into the position of corrupting the Sabbath because of, like the Pharisees, putting extra stipulations on the Sabbath day itself. Let's move on to the daylight portion of the Sabbath. And again, we have learned because there are certain principles and behaviors that are scriptural or based on scripture that when we learn these principles, whatever comes up, we can go, okay, knowing the basics and knowing what to base things on, what are the principles that would guide me towards making a right decision? It's not over personal opinion, and it's not to be enforced upon other people. So as we move into the daylight portion, we can look at the basics. We mentioned dressing for the Sabbath. Why do we dress on the Sabbath? Now, we know it's to honor God, but the question has come up from time to time, well, what does dressing up do? Some have said, I'm not trying to impress anybody. Well, that's good. You don't dress nice on the Sabbath day so you can impress. You shouldn't. It's not about impressing other individuals. It is coming before God in our best. When I was in Spokesman's Club at the end of the 70s into the early 80s, in Spokesman's Club, we had an individual that gave a speech and he said, you know, when we come to God on the Sabbath, we gather as God's people, we are coming before God and we're told to wear our best. And he said, but when we pray, we're coming before God too. So he said, every morning when I get up to pray, I put on a 3-piece suit and I pray and then I change into my work clothes and I go to work. I remember the club director saying, that's your choice. I don't think that you're going to get a lot of people that are going to put on their 3-piece suit to pray every day. But he wanted to look his best. And again, that is his personal choice. But he wasn't trying to enforce it. He was just recommending, saying, this is what I believe. We want to create an atmosphere of respect before God and set a higher standard. And we can say, well, is dress important to God? Does God care what we dress like? Much of the world would say, just come as you are. Flip-flops, shorts, whatever you want to wear to church is fine. As long as you're there, then you're doing what is right. Let's look at Matthew chapter 22. And again, we're looking at principles. Matthew chapter 22 and verse 10. Matthew 22 and in verse 10. So the servants went out into the highways and gathered together as many as they found, both bad and good, and the wedding was filled with reclining guests. And the king came in to look over the guest, and he saw a man there who did not have a wedding garment. He said to him, friend, how did you come in here not having a wedding garment? And he was speechless. The king said to the servants, bind him hand and foot, take him away, and cast him into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Well, wait a minute. He invited everybody. Weren't they supposed to just come as they wanted to? No, he was inviting them to a wedding, and all of the others understood, this is a wedding. This is something special. I have to dress appropriately. He says, many are called, but few are chosen. He said, many are invited. Few people are chosen to remain. For the wedding supper, the garment was very important, and it is for services as well, to dress properly before God. Dressing nicely at services shows respect for others that we're assembling with, that we agree that we're all coming before God together. Why do we have Sabbath services? This was mentioned by Mr. Franks in the In Accord as we just watched. Are we required to be here? Are we required to be at Sabbath services? He mentioned Hebrews 10:23, where it says, "Let us hold the profession of our faith without wavering, for he is faithful that promised. Let us consider one another to provoke to love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much more as you see the day approaching." Now you can either look at this as, oh, that's very clear that it's a requirement. Others say, no, it's an option, it's a choice. Of course, you can look at all of God's commandments and say, it's a choice. Or I can make it a choice. Or I can do like the Pharisees and water down some and overburden others. All of the commandments God gives to us is a choice. And God tells us in Deuteronomy, I've set before you these choices. Choose, but choose the right one. Choose life. So when God gives us the command here, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, it's at least highly recommended that you don't forsake being here, unless you're sick, unless there's other circumstances. But there's a reason for it. God says the Sabbath is holy. The high days are called holy days or high holy days. And the Sabbath itself is a holy day. They are commanded assemblies. So when God commands us to keep the holy days, when we look at spring holy days, people say, oh, you have to be at the holy days. They're commanded. Well, so is the Sabbath day. It is a commanded assembly. And when we look at God listing his feast, he says the first one he lists is the Sabbath. And it is a commanded assembly. The next holy days we'll keep is the days of unleavened bread. And in Exodus 12, we see on the first day, there is a holy convocation. And on the seventh day, there shall be a holy convocation. No manner of work is done in them, but that which every man must eat, only that can be prepared by you. That's Exodus 12 and verse 16. So when we read that, we note very quickly, wait a minute, on a high holy day, he says no work's to be done, but you can prepare your food. Now, the Pharisees and what we looked at earlier is you can't do any food preparation. You can't change anything. Well, if your meat's in a package here and the buns are here and you put the meat between the bun, you just changed the way that looks. You changed the way things are done. But it says, no, you can prepare your food even on a high holy day. So we're told that preparing our food is okay even on the high holy day or the high Sabbath. But the Feast of Unleavened Bread as well as other holy days are called Sabbaths or called high Sabbaths, and they are holy convocations. It means holy gathering, a holy calling out, or a holy rehearsal. He said it's something that you're to be a part of because you're preparing for something in the future. But it is a commanded gathering. But he tells us we choose. The Sabbath is also holy, and it is a time together as God's people. Now I want to look very quickly as we begin to wrap up. Look at some of the common questions that come up on the Sabbath day. Let's go to Luke chapter 14 and verse 1. Luke chapter 14 and verse 1. It came to pass, as he went into the house of one of the chief of Pharisees to eat bread on the Sabbath, that they watched him. Of course, they wanted to catch him doing something wrong. Behold, there was a certain man before him which had the dropsy. Now, there may be different translations. I looked up what this word dropsy means, and it says literally to look watery. There was a guy that looked watery. I don't know whether his eyes were running or his nose was running. But the guy had dropsy. Jesus answered and spoke to the lawyers and Pharisees, saying, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath day? Now, before they were asking him, is it wrong to heal? So here he's asking them, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? They held their peace. And he took him and he healed him and let him go. And he answered them, saying, which of you shall have an ass or an ox fall into a pit and will not straightway pull him out on the Sabbath day. Again, very similar to what we saw earlier about having a sheep that falls into a ditch, or you're not going to help it out. Well, even more so, you're going to help a human being. So he said, which would of you have an ox that falls into a ditch, or you're not going to help it out? This is where we get the proverbial ox in the ditch. And people will go, oh, I like this one because, okay, what I do here, that's an ox in the ditch, and this is an ox in the ditch, and this thing that I have to do every Sabbath is an ox in the ditch. What does having an ox in the ditch mean? Basically, it means there's an emergency. I have mentioned before, if you have an ox that every Sabbath falls in the ditch, you need to get a giant spit and build a fire, because that is no longer going to be an emergency if you do that. We don't intentionally throw an ox in the ditch so we have an emergency. At least we shouldn't. And again, that has been abused by some saying, well, it's an ox in the ditch situation. People find ways of making every weekend an emergency. I've just had this hard week. I need to get away, so we're going to the beach. Next week, it's been another hard week. We're going to go camping in the mountains. Oh, the next week, it's an ox in the ditch. Well, the way I feel, I just don't feel like going to services. And again, that's no longer an emergency. The ox in the ditch situation is if you find an ox in the ditch, you're going to help it. But it's not something that's going to be done perpetually every Sabbath. Another question comes up, owning a business 7 days a week, surely that's an ox in the ditch because there's no way around it. First, I don't recommend owning a business that runs 7 days a week. We saw this issue years ago, and people said, well, it's not wrong for me to have my employees working on the Sabbath because it's not me working, but yet it's in your control whether they work or not. Now, the church's literature goes through other things that if you are part of another company, but you don't control it and they have employees working, that doesn't mean you're breaking the Sabbath because those employees are still working. You don't have any control over that. God says you are to refrain from working on the Sabbath day because he's called you. Again, we don't want to change what God has said. God says you or your manservant or your maidservant, your children, your animals, those that are within your gates. And it doesn't mean, well, let's expand the gates of the city and then we'll make everybody keep the Sabbath day. It's within your control. The next one is using electricity. Is it wrong to use electricity? And that question still comes up because of the Pharisaical approach to keeping the Sabbath. Well, that means no hair dryers, no iron. What's worse is probably no coffee. I like the first thing in the morning, especially on the Sabbath. It's different than most mornings. Sabbath coffee, just for some reason, it tastes better. You're more relaxed. You're more looking forward to that coffee. But you use electricity. You use fire to make the boiling water to make coffee. I'm going to read from an older PCD letter. It says, you asked about Exodus 35, verse 3, wondering if this verse forbids cooking on the Sabbath. No, it doesn't. The verse reads, you shall kindle no fire throughout your dwellings on the Sabbath day. So some go, oh, you can't start a fire. It says, taken at face value, it indeed seems to imply in modern terms that there should be no cooking fire, but also no fire to heat one's home or water on the Sabbath. However, every verse should be taken in context. This is especially true of these verses that seem to be difficult to understand. Now we look at John Gill's expositor comments, and it says, this command is to be restrained from the building of the tabernacle. Now it was talking about building the tabernacle. And while that was about, which was prefaced, it is designed to prevent all public or private working on the Sabbath and anything belonging to that, having no fire to heat their tools or to melt their metals or do anything that which was necessary, for it is hardly to be thought that this was to be taken in the strictest sense. He's discussing the building of the temple and all of the jobs and what it takes to build the temple, and he says, I don't want you building these fires. I don't want you heating up the furnaces and melting down precious metals and doing the work of the temple on the Sabbath. He says that they do this as an entire prohibition against kindling a fire and use it on that day, which is so absolutely useful and needful in various cases. He said, there's certain times that you need fire. If you lived in Alaska and you can't use electricity or fire or anything on the Sabbath day, lighting candles 18 minutes before sundown is probably not going to help you keep warm on the Sabbath day. It says, in various cases where acts of mercy are necessary, they also require it. In cold seasons of the year, the warming and comforting of a person and otherwise that would be unfit for religious exercises. And on the account of infants, aged persons, or those who could not subsist without it, in cases of sickness and various disorders, it's necessary that they require it. Even for the preparation of food, which must be had on that day and others, the Sabbath was not to be a fast, but whether it was to be a festival. He properly analyzes this verse in context and shows that Moses was giving instructions about the construction of the tabernacle. He wasn't saying you don't light a fire anytime on the Sabbath. He was saying don't build the giant fires that like you're going to go to work like it's any other day. He says, the congregation of Israel, for the purpose of laying out the guidelines for the construction of the tabernacle, therefore it is logical to conclude, as Gil does, this is from the old PCD, it's logical to conclude, as Gil does, that the sentence above kindling fires on the Sabbath had to do with kindling fires for industrial purposes, for smelting and melting metals in conjunction with the tabernacle construction. And it's important as the tabernacle, as it was to Israel's worship of God, Israelites were not to work on the Sabbath day. The whole purpose goes back to the principle, you don't work on the Sabbath. So kindling a fire to do work, if you're a blacksmith, you go, oh, can't kindle my fire? How am I going to work on the Sabbath? Right, because you're not supposed to. But it doesn't mean the blacksmith can't go home and cook food or stay warm in the winter or anything else. The purpose was not to work. Many commentators as well as Jewish rabbis interpret this verse in the strictest manner as an absolute prohibition against any fire every Sabbath. They even institute restrictions against turning on lights, starting an engine, basically everything that utilizes power. However, Gill's additional points about the genuine hardships that would exist under those circumstances have to be considered. And so just as with other things, we look at the context. We don't take something out of context and go, oh, here's a little point. Don't use your own words. That means we can't talk about anything. No, you don't. You take it in context and you use the principles that God has given to us. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So one could hardly consider that eating cold meals on a cold day and not having any water to bathe with because it's cold, that's not a Sabbath that's made for man. That's man putting stipulations on the Sabbath. Gil commentary goes on and says, it's a valid explanation of the scripture. It doesn't forbid believers from using a fire on the Sabbath. It is in relation to avoiding all unnecessary work on the Sabbath. And that was the point of that particular passage. One of the other questions that comes up is about appropriate activities. We mentioned walking. You know, people have said it's wrong to go walking on the Sabbath day. And some feel that walking on the Sabbath is wrong. Now, if you're walking 10 miles with a backpack and it's all uphill, that would probably be wrong on the Sabbath. That's not just walking. That's hiking. That's doing your own thing. That's having done that many times with, not on the Sabbath, but having done it after camp with our extended session, it's work. It's a lot of hard work, and it would be difficult to keep your mind on the Sabbath when you're in pain and you're carrying a backpack and you're going up a mountain. It's very difficult. But walking is not something that is difficult, and people enjoy that. It makes the Sabbath pleasurable, makes it a delight. Some have asked over the years, well, can we get into our swimming pool? When it's hot in the summertime, can we just get in and cool off in the pool? They said, we have been told that that is wrong, and we were told that that's always wrong, and we couldn't do it. I said, you're talking about just getting in your own pool in the backyard and cooling off. And they said, yes. And I said, does it make the Sabbath more enjoyable? And they're like, it's 110 degrees. Yes, it makes it more enjoyable. I said, is there a difference between going to a water park or a swim meet and getting in the pool to cool off on the Sabbath. We can't say, well, if you're getting in the pool to swim, then these things aren't wrong. No, that begins to change the focus. If it's making the Sabbath more enjoyable, you're not doing your own thing, which we swim meet or going to a water park would be doing. But we do look at the Sabbath and we go, it would be more enjoyable to cool off. It'd be more enjoyable to go out and eat something. It'd be more enjoyable to be able to spend the Sabbath the way that God designed it. But it goes back to personal decision, discernment, and using the principles that God has given to us. Looking at how Christ kept it, looking at how the Pharisees had corrupted it, and how those things are still accepted today. What is wrong is trying to force somebody else to have the same opinion as you. Well, I think it's wrong to get in the pool on the Sabbath, so I'm going to tell everybody at church, you can't get in the pool on the Sabbath. It's wrong. That becomes now you trying to control other individuals or make the decision for them. And again, proving things to yourself and having a personal belief is one thing, but forcing it on others becomes where you begin to err. Why do individuals feel that it's important to convince others to have agreement with them on what they think is wrong or questionable? This came up, and it'll be the last verse we turn to, but John chapter 7. John chapter 7. Something similar when we look at the context or the situation. John chapter 7 and verse 22. He points out, because of this Moses gave you circumcision, not because it's of Moses, but of the fathers. He said, this was something that was passed down to the forefathers. And you circumcise a man on the Sabbath day. If a man receives circumcision on the Sabbath day so that the law of Moses should not be broken, are you angry with me because I've made a man entirely sound or completely well or completely whole on the Sabbath day? Do not judge according to sight, but judge righteous judgment. Again, understanding we don't condemn others because we say they're doing something wrong. We judge righteous judgment and go, okay, he's working on the Sabbath. God says that's wrong. That's righteous judgment. Going, I will determine what you do on the Sabbath and what you talk about on the Sabbath, and I will tell you what to do. Those are not judging righteous judgments. Now, what he was saying here is he said, you circumcise a man on the Sabbath. And we look at the principle in the context. We understand what he's saying is, you remove something from a man on the Sabbath, and it's okay. I make a man whole on the Sabbath, and you're telling me I'm sinning. He says, don't judge according to sight, but judge righteous judgment. We're to use proper judgment, use God's Spirit to make those decisions, and we don't use it to condemn others. He says, judge righteous judgment. Make good judgments, but don't make condemnations against other people. We have to understand and learn the principles behind what is given to us. Albert Barnes' commentary states, candidly looking at the law and inquiring what the Spirit really requires. What is really being said? What is it that's being brought out? What is the intent of the law? We are told, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. That word keep is to set apart, make it different, make it special. We need to practice remembering the Sabbath day, and remembering it from the perspective of even Jesus Christ, who gave us the understanding of how the Sabbath is to be kept. He's the very one who created it. And let's use discernment and righteous judgment and the principles that are given to us in keeping the weekly and the annual Sabbath days holy.
Thank you, Mr. Carter. Okay, brethren, we have one final opportunity to sing praises to God. Let's stand. Let's turn to hymn number 146. Go ye therefore into all the world. After which, I'd like to have Mr. Nathan O'Malley lead us in the closing prayer. Hymn number 146.